We've got a great conversation coming up, I think. It's history, Chicago political history, at a time when history is being made the Chicago way. We're going to be talking to Don Rose, the campaign manager of Mayor Jane Byrne, fighting Jane in her day. And he's also advising and backing Lori Lightfoot, who I think will be the next mayor of Chicago. It's a fascinating talk. And here with us is, as always, Jeff Carlin, executive producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis, and me, yours truly, John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist of the Chicago Tribune. Yes, a conservative floating on a sugar cookie in a lonely, turbulent sea of liberal milk. And this is the Chicago way. On WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
And as I promised you, now we're talking to Don Rose. I don't know what to say, liberal icon, Lori Lightfoot advisor. He was back in the days of Jane Byrne, and I've always wanted to do this to someone on the left that I respect. Because on the people on the left tell me that they don't like my national politics, but they say your understanding of local politics is good. In other words, I agree with them. They agree with me on some stuff, but not other stuff.
Well, and I understand that.
For you, I'd like to say the same thing. I disagree with your national politics, but your local politics is right on, Don right. Rose.
Well, I've always used the term, and I think a number of other people have used the term, progressive reform. And although I stand for progressive issues, which you may disagree with, we agree on reform.
Correct.
And independence.
Let's see if it expresses itself in less than a week now. In the April 2nd election, who wins the mayoralty?
Lori Lightfoot by something between a landslide and a blowout.
You think so?
I think so.
Now, of course, you are an advisor to Lori Lightfoot, unpaid. And she'd be wise to have you, and I'm glad she has you. You helped engineer Jane Byrne's victory against the machine.
Yeah, I was her campaign manager.
And now Lori Lightfoot. And is there any similarity between the two?
No, only the fact that they are outsider women who were once employed. Either in regular or in paid or voluntary capacities with the city, and who turned one way or another on the leaders of the machine.
So you think it's going to be either a blowout or a landslide for Lori?
Somewhere in between, yeah.
I would argue that whoever it was that got into that progressive anti-machine slot would win. Of the machine people, and I put Tony in that group, even though she was progressive. She is progressive.
But not a reformer.
Not a reformer.
Well,
that's like Stalin might have been
progressive. The strategy of her campaign, the strategy of Lori's campaign, which had to change. You'll remember she was one who was in the group of a dozen or so who were going to challenge Rahm until Rahm pulled out.
Right.
And when the four establishment candidates, semi-machine candidates, what have you, came in, they were all pushed back, and a strange thing happened. The most consequential person in this election was Ed Burke, after Rahm pulled out, of course. That brought the issue of machine corruption to the very fore. It had been tried to be used many, many times in the past to no avail. But the starkness of Burke and then subsequently Danny Solis really put the issue out there, and it was going to be reform or machine. And fortunately, all the machine constituencies were broken up. It was a four-way split.
Right. You had Mendoza splitting, Susana Mendoza splitting against Eddie Chico, right. Bill Daley.
Bill Daley out there, you know, and little did they know that Jerry Joyce, who had his own reason for running, was going to be able to take so many votes away from him. But all of those candidates were locked in for a month or more with 12 to 15% of the vote.
Right.
Preckwinkle started out at 30%, and as soon as the Burke thing started happening, she dropped down to 14, 15%.
Remember, at that time, she was tagged with accepting Burke,
fundraising
operation.
$116,000 altogether, including a fundraiser at his house, which she tried to say was because of his wife, which would have been an ethical violation right. because she's a Supreme Court justice.
Right. And that one of those, one of the people that groups that he tried to raise money for Preckwinkle was the group that he allegedly shook down owning the Whoppers.
Right.
Burger
right.
King.
Exactly. And then the link was really confirmed and pasted her badly was the fact that Burke's son got a $100,000 a year job with the county for which he was totally unqualified. There you saw, in effect, a quid pro quo.
Right.
Add to that her support for Berrios right down to the very last second tied her into old-fashioned machine politics, which she was, you know, had been trying to escape.
And what's with the Tony Rezko thing that Lori Lightfoot keeps putting around Preckwinkle's neck?
She had dealings with Tony Rezko when she was fourth ward alderman, and he was doing development in that ward.
Back when he was building, buying very expensive half lots for the Obamas.
That from a fellow whose name escapes me at the moment. Became president or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd always, you know, insiders knew that Tony Rezko was bad news for a long time. I was a consultant to the Illinois Housing Development Authority for many years, and 30 years to be exact, and complaints about Rezko were bubbling up to the surface there, and as a result, they had to knock him out, but without any fanfare. So his name was not prominent as a bad actor until a little later on.
And the left did not want to see Rezko as a bad actor when he was so tight to Obama, but be that as it may, the fact that...
The left may not, but reformers did.
The fact that Lightfoot brings up Rezko repeatedly in debates with Preckwinkle as a bad actor, and knowing the history of Chicago that Rezko and Obama are inextricably linked, I've got to think that she must think, and as a strategist, I'd like you to put your thinking cap on this. It's evidence to me, tea leaves that you'd read, that the Obamas are clearly not going to get involved in this election, at least overtly for Preckwinkle at all.
Yeah, they have said that they're standing on the sidelines, and they need the support of the mayor to complete that library, thinkatorium, whatever the hell they're building out there in my old
temple,
neighborhood.
Temple of love.
Yeah.
Temple of hope.
And
that's
fealty.
What I like.
So they're going to need the support of a mayor. In addition to which, of his supporters and constituency, they're split up between Preckwinkle and Laurie. As a matter of fact, in older days, as Obama was just rising and looked like a serious candidate, Preckwinkle was one of the few Chicago politicians who would badmouth him. There was a little thing in the New Yorker that they could go back to. So, She's really? Always, yeah, yeah, just not terribly stuff, but she was distancing herself. And so there's never been really good blood between them.
As we look at Preckwinkle, I see a woman who was of the left, made her deal with the devils for power, made a deal with Burke, she made a deal with Berrios, she made a deal with all, she had accommodated power. In a sense, she's like Jane Byrne, is she not? And you knew Byrne in a way.
She never flipped quite as openly and clearly as Jane Byrne did. But yes, it's a process I've seen, unfortunately, with other people who've gone in as reformers and slowly and sometimes not so slowly buy in. One was just finally blasted out of office. Joe Moore was an example of a guy who.
Yeah.
Came in as as an independent reformer. I helped him in his early days.
I remember in 1983. I was back then. I was a writer for the Daily Calumet. We were trying to get Eddie Verdoyak in jail, and Joe Moore was wasn't he of the 29? He was the Washington guy.
He was the Washington guy.
He was in the Washington Coalition.
Yeah, he came in after that. He replaced David Orr.
That's right, yes.
David Orr was the 49th Ward Alderman, and then he was mayor for a day. Now, there's a guy who stayed straight and clean all the way through.
He should have held on. We call them BBs for a reason, you know this, but when you hold the mayor's chair in Chicago, you don't give it up, my friend.
Yeah, the throne.
He gave it up.
He couldn't hang on to it under those circumstances.
Well, and Don, so kind of the comparison between how the media kind of changes the way you plan for running for election and trying to win, how do you think the modern era of social media is different for Lightfoot than Byrne? I mean, is it easier to get a message out, do you think, now? And kind of pivot, because like you said, she had to change tactic.
Well, you can deal with all kinds of constituencies. You can meet them in various places. As you know, people no longer get their news predominantly, not just from newspapers, but even from TV. It's all the dominant news source is some form of the internet, which has just changed everything. Look at your president. He found that out.
Look, we're on it. And, right? People are tuning to us now on the internet.
Yeah, here we are on something called a podcast, which 2 years ago, could you tell me what the hell that was?
Correct.
But do you think that the getting out there and boots on the pavement is still more powerful than the media piece of it?
Ground game.
Nothing is more powerful than a ground game within its context. If you've got to do a lot of pre-selling in order for your ground game to be meaningful, and you can find your potential audience. You don't have to knock on 100 doors to find 30 supporters. You can now, with the tools available, you can winnow it down to 40 people to get your 30, because you have various ways of figuring out, if somebody who gives a contribution to the ACLU or somebody gives a contribution to some other NRA, let's say. Mm-hmm. So you can do a lot of filtering and tailor your message to them and so on. And then, of course, you have to harvest them with the ground game. You can do a better job of pre-identification than you do it. Like right now, Lightfoot's only serious worry is whether there's going to be overconfidence and not enough people are going to turn out. Well,
I'd be worried, too.
That's why you need a ground game.
And does she? Well, the other day on the WTCW debate, Preckwinkle was asked, you've dropped your television fundraising 2 weeks out, less than 2 weeks out. What's going on? And she started talking about Chance the Rapper. She didn't want to address the issue. Oh, Chance the Rapper, it's wonderful to be endorsed by Chance the Rapper. Of course, Phil Ponce could have pushed it. Chance the Rapper is working, helping his dad, who's working for Preckwinkle, but he didn't, or he didn't do it forcefully enough. But there was something in what she said, Don, that gave me pause, and that as a person who hopes Lori Lightfoot wins, and that was, she talked about her ground game. She's not putting the money in the on TV, but she talked about how the importance of a ground game, the importance of talking to the voters directly. And I've got to think she's going to be putting some of that money that she's not spending on TV with the Chicago Teachers Union. That's 30,000 members, people, door knockers right there. And the SEIU, which has serious ability to knock on doors, and spend that money as precinct money out on the streets with black preachers that she, clergy that she can reach, and try to grab this thing at the last minute. What do you think of that analysis?
That could be part of the game. The more important question is she really out of money, or is she saving up for the last 10 days? Going dark for a week or two. I've been in campaigns which had to do that because of the financial situation, but they wanted to make sure the last week, 10 days, whatever, they had something. And maybe she has some big negative blast to go. On the other hand, she may be completely out of money, and all those precinct dollars are not going to do any good.
Your point there is fascinating. She could be holding back with a negative blast, and here's another question. In the last 10 days of a campaign, the last 2 weeks of a campaign, we're in that final phase now. I don't like to pick up any, I don't want to do negative stories on people. I don't want to do a drop, you know, somebody calls you with a scoop. It's a drop, an oppo drop, and you reporters pretend that they broke it themselves.
Yeah.
But it's really an oppo drop.
Sure.
Slip to you. And there's really not a lot of respect to the journalist who that stuff is given to. But it's effective. If you can kill your candidate or kill your opponent or wound your opponent with a lot of TV after you get the legitimacy of that oppo negative in journalism, in a newspaper. Well, what do you say about that? What do you think of that?
Well, it's a technique that has worked. In the old days, we used to call it a roarback, something at the last, a last-minute negative shot, hopefully so fast and furious that the candidate doesn't have a chance to respond. I don't know what is possible there. Who knows what somebody can come up with, true or false. They've done a pretty good job of digging into almost every case Lori Lightfoot has had and finding some negative opprobrium there. And it so far has not done much good. Negative campaigning, the rap on negative campaigning has always been everybody hates it, but it works. So she has just not found the right negative campaign, or found an issue that really resonates with the public. She's tried everything from associating, you know, the worst cases, her big law firm, an international law firm, the worst people that firm ever represented, and making it sound like she's the fascist behind the whole thing.
Lori's rebuttal, hey, Tony, you took the money from this firm. I even gave you money. You took my money.
Yeah, well, sure.
It's good, isn't it?
She hasn't connected with enough people to make a difference, and Lori has a pretty good response on all of those. So, fortunately, you know, people wondered at the beginning of this race, as soon as Preckwinkle came out of the gate with negative stuff beginning election night, Lori hit her back within 2 days with negative stuff there. And people were saying, oh, is this going to be just a negative campaign? And I pointed out that if you don't come back in a negative campaign against you, and you wait too long, you're going to suffer the fate of John Kerry, who did not respond to those Swift boat ads. He was told, take the high road. And he took the high road, which led to oblivion.
Well, he also was difficult to respond to something that like that because there was an element of truth in some of that stuff.
An element, but not the whole truth.
Well, the fact
as we leftists would say,
we could argue that, but the fact is she did, Lori Lightfoot did attack or counterattack quickly. Now we have an issue that concerns me about Lori. Again, I preface it by saying I've already predicted she's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I want her to be to win.
Welcome to
one,
the club.
One is because I want real change here. And I hear people talk, those people who write about this stuff and think about this stuff publicly. And unfortunately, some people are completely mesmerized by skin pigments and gender and so forth. They can't think outside that. But for real history to change, for history to be made, it's not just someone with different skin pigment and gender was elected. To me, the history has to be, to make real change, is that a culture begins to change. And the political culture of Chicago cannot change unless Lori Lightfoot's election brings aldermen with her.
Exactly. And it looks to me like this is going to be a substantial anti-incumbent runoff. We might lose people like Pat O'Connor. He got only 35% of the vote. That's a very dangerous number for an incumbent. Anything below 40% is a serious danger, and Pat O'Connor is desperately fighting back, putting ads on television. The guy's never been on television in his life.
And not even that. That's my word, too, in you seeming on digital ads. I mean, all over the place, in places you wouldn't expect to see it. And it's targeted to me because, that's how they do it, obviously.
Right.
They geolocate. And every time I'm on the internet, I'm bombarded with O'Connor ads, and it reeks of desperation.
Do they mention his wife making all that money selling real estate?
Well, that's the counter argument, and I think that's going to help take him down. I the way it looks now, there's a symbiosis between Lightfoot and at least six serious independent-minded and maybe even sometimes going to be independent of her,
right,
aldermanic candidates. Now, that is what the change is, I believe. And should we get enough of those guys into the city council after this runoff? Usually there's two or three people, independents will win the runoff, and sometimes they get swept up anyway. But enough of these people come in, it's going to affect the other incumbents, the guys who made their peace, very much the way there were a lot of very machine-oriented, rapacious black aldermen when Harold came in. And when he cracked the whip, they had to fall in line. Of course, they fell out of line as soon as he died, but
the black
there is an effect there. They're going to look around some of these other machine types and say, do I continue doing this? I could be next.
Let's name some. Is Carrie Austin? She's running for re-election, right, Carrie? Right, the budget.
I think she's already in.
Yeah. Okay. She's in. But yeah. Who?
There's somebody who a very good example of somebody who can swing back the other way and hopefully stay, and hopefully Lori stays alive. And damn Harold for dying when he did. That was very thoughtless.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he would have could have made a more significant cultural change if he'd completed his second term and then his third, fourth, fifth. Unfortunately, those Sunday fried chicken dinners at every church picnic did him in.
I used to go to those church dinners with him, and he told me not to eat. Yeah. He goes, don't eat the first one. Eat the second one.
Yeah. That wasn't exactly my experience when I'd be over at his house after those 3 o'clock, those afternoons, and he'd bring out 6 or 8 doggy bags or whatever you want to call it and say, no, you got to try this one. It was from so-and-so, and it was really good. And then over here, this one was terrific.
You know the story behind that? There's a story behind that, guys, on the Chicago Way. We should tell the real stories of things. I heard the story, and I think it's true. True enough to tell it on Chicago Way, and I've told it in my column. When Harold Washington would go to a place that he liked, there's a lot of spies in this town. And the Daily guys would hear about it and would send, like if he went to a pizza place or went to the junk, you know, the Chinese restaurant in Chinatown, they'd send him like boatloads of food.
Yep.
And he thought it was from them, from the restaurant. They were just sending it.
Slow death by by mayonnaise, huh?
Right, I guess, something like that.
And so, Don, I kind of want to step back, too, a little, because I'm really fascinated about the comparison between Lightfoot and Byrne and just the atmosphere around those two different elections. I mean, how do you think this is? Because it's, you know, we're coming out, we came off a daily run and then had a ROM, and then now it's kind of, There's turmoil in the water and things have changed up. Kind of a similar situation to what happened with Byrne, but how do you compare and contrast those?
Externally only, they're two very, very different people.
Yeah, right.
Jane Byrne was very, very unsure of herself, and she had a husband whispering in her ear all the time, telling her that City Hall is littered with the bones of reformers. And stick with my friends Chucky Swibel and such folk. Jane used to follow strong men. I was her strong man during the campaign because she saw what I was doing for her. But once that was over, I had in fact lined up a city council majority for her, and she walked away from it. I believe on the main advice of her husband, but who knows what else was in there. Laurie is a totally different person. She's independent. She's one of the smartest people in town. Any lawyer will tell you that, whether no matter what side they're on. She has all the confidence she needs. She knew exactly what she was doing when she declared for office. She knew exactly what she was doing when she broke away on the issue of police reform. Jane broke away on taxicab
issues. Right.
So there are some superficial parallels, but such totally different personalities. And Laurie is someone with a deep ingrained philosophy, which Jane never had.
What is that philosophy?
She is a very progressive-minded. She may not check every box on, you know, which
I hope not.
Medicare thing you might want.
Right.
And she is very reform-minded. She's been around and she knows the difference. Jane did not exactly call herself a reformer. If you'll remember the spot I made for her that sort of clinched it. I had a recording of the first Mayor Daley saying good things about her as she was given some party position, and we used to call it Daley endorses Byrne.
If you wonder what kind of mayor Jane Byrne would make, here are the words of the late mayor, Richard J. Daley.
We appointed Jane Byrne, she was one of the most capable women I met, co-chairman of the Democratic Party of the city of Chicago.
As a member of Mayor Daley's cabinet, she learned how to make Chicago work. As co-chairman of the Democratic Party, she learned about real leadership.
Right. Good, thank you. I really need the help, and if you'll tell all your friends.
Jane Byrne can get this city working again. Vote for her in the Democratic primary.
So she didn't run away from that.
Right.
She ran away from Bolandic. Right. It's really two distinct personalities, and philosophies. You know, if you go just on intellect, you probably got a 50-point differential right there, meaning no disrespect to Jane, who did have some qualities.
And I don't think anybody around Lori Lightfoot is being entertained by the most statuesque Swedish or Norwegian hooker in Chicago's history, like some people around Jane Byrne were entertained by the famous Inga, right?
Well,
that's,
yeah.
Right? I don't think this, I don't, that's another Chicago way. Oops.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, that's a story. And I think that's why some say, maybe Don can explain to us, did Jay Mullen, McMullen get hit in the head by an ashtray as a result of
the famous Inga? Yeah. I was not a witness to it, but that is my best information.
And Lori doesn't play that.
No.
One thing that's different, Lori's lesbian.
Yeah.
Black lesbian.
And black. So, I mean, she is out of a totally different culture. Jane was from, you know, an Irish Catholic, to some extent, Kennedy-worshipping culture. And so, I mean, she had her own thoughts. She was not... By comparing their intellects, I don't want to say that she was a dummy.
She was the tribe, though.
Right. But she was not philosophically formed. The background is totally different. I mean, black people, particularly those who've had relatives going way, way back, a distant relative of hers was killed by the Klan. Growing up black, growing up not totally impoverished but poor, makes a whole lot of difference in forming you and climbing out of that, becoming a federal prosecutor and so on. So when you're a federal prosecutor, you've seen an awful lot of life and you know what you're doing.
Also, I think just the fact that she's gay and black, coming up in a culture that wasn't very welcoming, it's of that lifestyle, given the churches and the whole history, tends to change someone, give someone a certain perspective, I think, that we need. That has nothing to do with sexuality. It has to do with thinking outside you can love your tribe and still understand the faults in the tribe.
Absolutely.
I think that's very important. But it brings me to the issue of a few... like a week ago or so, which Lori Lightfoot was going around to churches, and we had the inevitable flyers that were put out on cars around black churches warning them that the gays would take over. It was like the blacks would take over of years ago.
Yeah, in fact, they used a slogan that had been used against Harold, "It's Our Turn." Which was very clever. I mean,
that was Harold's slogan.
It wasn't exactly a slogan. Harold said it once.
Yeah, but it was used as the
and
campaign.
It was used against. It was repeatedly used against him. He did not repeat it himself. He may have once or twice, but it was used by the other side, saying, you know, it's us versus them, and. So that kind of echoed in that pamphlet. And I think it's very important that the church outside of which those handbills were distributed was the church of a former state senator and a very well-known conservative pastor.
James Meeks.
James Meeks, who made part of his rep by being anti-gay.
Well, he's
anti-abortion and so on.
That's where I'm conflicted, because I'm not going to condemn people for their sexuality, but I'm also not going to condemn people for adhering to the teachings of their church.
I'll grant you that.
Because that would be bigoted as well. I would say I like what Willie Wilson says. Let Jesus decide who the sinner is.
Yeah. This is, you know, people for a couple of centuries have been coming to grips with their own religious upbringings or religious teachings, some of which are overtaken by events, some of which are modified in the secular world. I'm not condemning him, but I think it's significant that that's whose church was the base of distribution.
Will it hurt Lightfoot?
I think it has probably helped her a little bit. You know, you're always going to lose around the edges, but I don't think any. I think those who are against her, because for whatever reason, because of her sexual orientation, are already baked in the cake. I don't think we're going to get any new people, despite the fact that Preckwinkle tried to broadcast it. You know, oh, I'm really glad that you're so open about being a lesbian. You know, I'm for lesbians too. You know,
right. So you didn't. So you thought that was overdone.
I thought it was not just a dog whistle, but a megaphone. You know,
right. But a megaphone into a canyon. I mean, like you said, those it was an echo coming back at them. That was, you weren't reaching, and there were no new audience being like, whoa. Yeah, I mean, you can't imagine that anybody would have seen that and thought, oh, I didn't know that. You know,
well, yeah. Well, she was hoping that there was. You know, there may still be some people to whom it's news. Who knows? You know,
that's true.
There's always somebody out there. But are they going to not vote? Are they going to whatever? So I think she's just groping for arguments against her because she's got to go negative.
She's still the chairman of the party. She's still the chairman of the Democratic Party, Cook County Board President. If she loses this race, what is the point of her going negative on Lori if she thinks Lori's going to win this thing?
There you have what we might call a personality issue. She is a very pugnacious person. She does not take criticism well. I know a number of issues, you know, minor stories, just as, you know, somebody else out there is a bad boss. She has a vindictive side, and you've seen it. And
where?
Just in the way she's handled this whole campaign.
Well, Justin, I mean, you can look at the months ago, there was an IG report about how the Cook County Medical wasting money and weren't tracking things and weren't billing people right. And instead of coming out and saying, wow, this is really good information, you know, we need to kind of reorganize and look at how we do things and look at how we bring in money, she goes after the IG and says, well, your report was one-sided and didn't look at the facts correctly, and goes after the person who's supposed to be doing these things, supposed to be presenting ways to make our governance better, and she looks at it as an attack.
Oh, yeah, it's beyond stupidity in some cases. When a group called Stand for Children, which is a charter school advocacy group, published what was an independent poll. I happen to know the reputation of the pollster that showed Lori to be 30 points ahead of Tony from the get-go. They started attacking not just the pollster but the group and tried to say, even though Lori is for the same moratorium on charter schools that Tony is, they don't have much difference on that. They're trying to make her the Stand for Children candidate. You know, they're reaching out for anything. As I say, it's been stupid. And I believe, you know, she's supposed to have dismissed a number of her campaign staff because they couldn't turn this thing around, or they couldn't. You know, she did so poorly, relatively speaking, in the first round, and so they're out there just, you know, throwing the spaghetti against the wall.
But we can't close without thinking two things about Lori Lightfoot. Number one, you want to hear a prediction?
Yes.
Lori Lightfoot wins this thing, which I think she will, immediately. They're going to start talking about her as a possible vice presidential candidate.
anything is possible, but I tend to doubt that. Although,
please doubt
that's,
it,
that's a reasonable true. It's a reasonable thought
from someone who's been doing this 7,000 years. Yeah. Number two, what concerns me about Lightfoot is that now that she's over the hump and she's looking good, I'm not going to say she's going to swamp the field. Overconfidence could destroy this thing, but I've noticed a lot of new talent, Jeff and Don, coming around Lori Lightfoot, political people with ties to other people that I don't think are that savory, or, you know, they have connections and all that. There are a lot of new people coming around Lori Lightfoot.
And some old people, too.
And some old people, too. But does she have the wisdom and the critical thinking skill about herself to know that's exactly what's going to undo her if she lets them, you know, turn her head this way or that way?
I, based on personal conversations with her, I think she is fully aware of that. How it's going to play out, you know, who knows? I have a great deal of confidence in her, but, you know, I've seen many, many people go to the dark side. So, you know, I can't give you a blood oath that ain't going to happen. I just think that from my experience with her, from looking her up and talking to her before I joined her campaign, I think she's the kind of person who can hold up because she has carved out her own sphere there. And she will have the backup of enough progressive people, reform people, to keep it up. I'm sure there will be a compromise or two along the way. She has to fight, you know, what could be some majorities of the council that will buck her. You know, they'll be feeling their oats for whatever reason. So, as I say, from one whose experience shows, some good people have stayed with it, like a David Orr. And some other people went away, like Joe Moore. The way I look at it, the odds are she stays.
Let's hope so. Don Rose, 60 years in Chicago politics?
Closer to 70, actually.
70 years. You're still a spry lad. Yeah. You're going off to lecture classes and do this and that, and you're still teaching. You're still writing, right? You're writing.
Writing a weekly column for the Chicago Daily Observer.
Right.
Yeah. Not doing much teaching except an occasional lecture. I don't have any courses, but.
And you're in that kitchen cabinet. You're there as one of the senior people advising. What I think is going to be an amazing story.
I believe so.
Lori Lightfoot. Thanks, Don Rose.
Always a pleasure.
For Don Rose, who engineered the victory, stunning mayoral victory of Mayor Jane Byrne, and is now advising Lori Lightfoot, who I think will be historically a fantastic Chicago mayor. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis here on WGN AM. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist of the Chicago Tribune and a guy who loves doing this podcast with you. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for subscribing and writing those great reviews. See you next time on another edition of the Chicago Way.